me tell you of the days of high adventure.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm John.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
We're going to get into the nitty-gritty and examine the good, the bad, the ugly, and the laughable in these movies.
But we're always coming from a place of love. You don't watch these movies as much as we have unless you have a genuine affection for them.
Hi, John.
What's up, Wody? Wody-san.
That's old school.
Shout out. Bringing it back.
Circa 2001.
That's right.
Probably.
From the Georgia State University Olympic Village. Where did you not tell me that that our subject today debuted in that very place?
This film that we're going to talk about today, it's one of its premieres. I think there was a red carpet Los Angeles premiere, but it also premiered in 1996 at the Atlanta Olympic Village
for the centennial.
Athletes and dignitaries and all of that type stuff. There are pictures online and I'm like, holy shit, that is where John and I met each other.
That's where we used to be out on the courtyard area throwing the softball around like Dugans.
So I think this is it's meant to be that we're going to talk about this movie, which is 1996's Eraser.
Right.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think this is like the last good, true action movie that he made.
This is the last action hero.
Yes. That very thing that you said.
Speaking of.
What did you make of it? You did not grow up watching this.
So when I popped this on, thank you Netflix for having it on there, because oftentimes they don't. And often I have to pay for
it. So if you're listening at home, check Netflix out, see if it's there. I think it still is
today.
In my mind, it's always like would behoove you as a listener to have the movie fresh in your mind when you listen along.
Yeah, so hit pause, go listen to a little bit and come back and let us know what you think. But as far as is this movie watchable? Heck yeah, it is. Is it a lot of fun? Definitely. Is it super formulaic and predictable? Yes, indeed it is. From start to finish, there is not one single solitary surprise.
It felt a little bit like, a little bit paint by numbers, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that being said, so my history with the movie, as I recall it, was at some point the family had like a free month or free 2 months of HBO.
We love that.
And this was on all the time, like multiple times a day one summer.
Yep.
And then 15-year-old Kevin or 16-year-old Kevin watched it like daily for about a month, probably, because it was what was on. And I was not going to change the channel off HBO.
Man, because you were afraid it was going to be gone.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, I got to take advantage of this while I've got it.
Yeah. I remember that. It's like whenever the free HBO promotional thing came around, it was like there was a steady lineup of about 5 or 6 movies that they just had on rotation all day.
It's a little different than that now, but back then it was definitely like every 8 hours, like it'd cycle back to what they had been showing that morning or something like that. Honestly, my first exposure to these action movies was on an HBO free weekend. It must have been like 88 or 89 because it was Kickboxer and Die Hard on heavy rotation.
Nice.
And I watched the shit out of them. Were you also a guy who was going to pop a tape in the VCR and record that shit for later?
I feel like the technology eluded me because I didn't do it, but like parents did. Parents definitely recorded stuff.
I had a cabinet full of bootlegs, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, we were big video store people. I mean, we did have a stack of bootlegs and stuff, and we'd do that before vacation. Sometimes Dad would take us and pick out some stuff. But for the most part, it was not like it wasn't this kind of stuff. Just because I was telling you before, it was weird that he was not into like stereotypical guts and glory action movies. It just wasn't up his alley for whatever reason.
This movie, I think, falls definitely in that category of like being a dad movie.
Right.
Like it's aging actors, you know, like we were talking on our Con Air series about the movie Air Force One, which is probably like the most dad movie.
Oh, yeah.
Ever. You know, like 60-year-old Harrison Ford kicking ass.
Yeah.
It's like that's every dad, you know, every dad's
fuck
like,
yeah, I
still got it. Go fuck up some terrorists. Why not?
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll get to the movie here. Some great names attached with it. Some that I was less familiar with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Starting with this director, Charles Russell,
The Mask and Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors,
which I was not a big The Mask watcher, but you were, right?
I worshipped at the altar of Jim Carrey.
Okay.
I was a James Carrey disciple.
I
bought into it.
I was all over Dumb and Dumber and all over Ace Ventura, and somehow like The Mask fell through the cracks for me. But yeah, so it's interesting though, like neither of those movies are very much like this movie.
No. It was like the dude can do anything, apparently. It's crazy.
Produced by Anne and Arnold Copelson.
Responsible for Seven, Outbreak, Murder at 1600, Devil's Advocate, among countless others. Very busy folks.
Did you mention The Fugitive?
I did not.
They did that one. Yeah, and I think that Arnold, I think, also won an Oscar for producing Platoon.
That's cool.
But yeah, Anne was the wife, frequent producing partner. She typically seemed like she was an executive producer. What I had read somewhere was that Arnold and Charles Russell had linked up and were looking for something to do. They were trying to develop some projects.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one got presented to them and they were like, oh, this is better than any of the other shit, I guess, that we're messing around with. So let's do it. So that happened.
Charles Russell probably knew. I was like, oh, I can't fuck this up. If it's this formula and it's Arnold, like there's no way it's like people are going to come see it.
So I've got here, it's written by Tony Puryear and Waylon Green with a story credit for a dude named Michael S.
Chernuchin?
Chernuchin.
Yeah, I went and looked at their stuff, and only the one guy, I think Waylon Green, has tons and tons and tons of TV credits.
He wrote The Wild Bunch.
That's crazy.
Like, way back, you know. Yeah. Like, and he wrote a movie I've never seen that you dropped a reference for recently. He wrote Solar Babies.
Oh, shit. Really? I did not see that.
What is that movie?
It is a movie that takes place in a dystopian future, like all good movies do. And it's, I don't even know how to describe it. Except
it's like
a teen movie, children
right?
have been like enslaved in this weird society. And these kids like rebel by sneaking out of their fucking like mine facility where they all, you know, are slave labor all day to like go roller skate.
Okay.
And then they somehow come across this alien life form that is like the key to a better future. And so it's very, very, very out there. I feel like Michael Ironsides is in that movie.
I looked it up and it had some of like the 80s teen, like the lesser, not the Brat Packers,
two tiers below that. it's good. It's worth a watch.
And that dude, Waylon Green, also apparently was an uncredited writer on War Games, which is one of my favorites
in
that era. Then I also read that John Milius did like heavy rewrites on Eraser and was uncredited. Also heavy rewrites done by Frank Darabont, who wrote Shawshank Redemption directed Shawshank Redemption. And heavy rewrites by William Wisher, who wrote Terminator 1 and 2.
What I want to know is the script just getting passed around to these guys at different times? They're definitely not all getting together.
No, it can't be. It's like we throw you $50,000, I think, and you take a pass at it, like fix some things maybe, where give us ideas. You know, ideas.
This is in a day, like in the nascence of computer and word processing technology. So these guys were definitely not like tracking changes.
They were
sending a fucking huge ass manila envelope, like 4 inches thick, full of pages, like marked up. Just
faxing that shit. We got a 400 page fax coming through.
Oh my God. You can't use the phone for 4 hours.
What I also read was that they wanted Stallone to play the movie, and Stallone thought the script was too shitty. And maybe some earlier version. God. Maybe I know that's Rich from Stallone.
Yeah, I was about
but
to
maybe
say.
Some earlier version, maybe like the version that made it to film, which isn't that bad, was fixed by all these super talented writers who did post, you know, did rewrites.
Well, I
want
to know
it.
Then is like, was Jimmy Khan supposed to play the villain the whole time? Like, what was the deal? Because he's got. And maybe it's just because he's just legendary that everything he says in the movie, even though it might not be the greatest line ever written.
He like sells it.
Yeah, you believe it.
Yeah, he's a
anyway,
badass.
We'll get to that in a second.
And tell music by Alan Silvestri.
Fucking idol. Prolific. Forrest Gump. More recently, Avengers Endgame, but Predator, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Mac and Me, classic.
Back to the Future.
Back to the all the backs, backs to the future. It's like he's done. His IMDb is insanity.
He's one done, of the big he's like him and Hans Zimmer and
he's done like between 5 and 8 movies a year since the early 90s.
It's like you got John Williams and then that next tier on like the Mount Rushmore is probably Silvestri and Hans Zimmer and
I'd say Morricone's probably up there with John Williams in a different kind of obviously a different way but
and then as I was just telling you before we started recording, director of photography was this dude named Adam Greenberg who did Terminator and Terminator 2 and supposedly Arnold picked him, like hand selected him because he knew this dude Greenberg could handle a lot of action and keep him on schedule.
Right.
And I think they might have been in a little bit of a rush trying to get this film shot.
I mean, I guess so. I can definitely see why it does feel a little slapped together at times, but no more so than most of these movies feel. You know?
Yeah. So starring, as we've mentioned, Arnold Schwarzenegger as a U.S. Marshal John Krueger / Eraser.
Yeah, that's what we're going to call him Eraser.
Yeah. And then we got James Caan as U.S. Marshal Robert DeGaron.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking idol. Rest in peace.
Ah, so sad to hear he's gone.
Jimmy Caan, it's a fucking legend. I mean, Godfather, Misery, Thief, Bottle Rocket.
Yeah, dude, anytime he said the name John in this movie, John! John!
And then Elf, of course.
Yes.
I feel like, and man, yeah, so Arnold on the aftermath tweeted about James Caan. James Caan was an icon, a legend. He inspired everyone who has ever been in front of a camera. I was lucky to work with him and see his talent and his fantastic sense of humor firsthand. He was a great training partner in the gym and a true friend, and I'll miss him.
That's awesome.
Fucking stand-up guy, that Arnold.
R.I.P.
I love the thought of them, like, hitting the gym together.
I do, too, yeah.
I feel like Arnold's just that dude who, like, let's go pump some iron.
Yeah, like, because he's in there anyway, and people are like, yeah, you got to work out with
Arnold. Oh, dude, could you imagine if Arnold was like, you want to go, like, do some curls with me?
That'd be amazing, because
even if you know you can't do what he can do, it's kind of like, I don't think he cares that much. I think he just wants to see everyone, like,
be their
working
best
on their fitness, you know? Yeah, that's fucking killer, man.
That's enough to get me inspired.
Also starred Vanessa Williams as Lee Cullen.
Right.
That's Miss America, 1983.
Crown stripped because she stripped.
Later resigned in some controversy after doing a nude photo shoot.
That's some bullshit.
Also a very talented singer, like won lots of Grammys.
Amazing singer.
Really,
big really
hit was
Save
the Best for Last.
Yep.
Big 80s/90s ballad. It had to be a 90s song.
Yeah.
And she does, like, good work. I feel like this was her first.
The sun comes down in June. Anyway.
I feel like this was her first, like, big foray into Hollywood, like, acting.
Yeah.
And she carries her own, I would say.
Yeah, she was perfectly fine. She was not offensive.
We also see James Coburn, another legend.
Oh, my God, yeah. Hollywood legend, especially particularly from, like, that classic westerns era.
Yeah, dude. So he plays Chief Arthur Beller, like the chief of witness security.
Grew up a big fan of James Coburn because like we had like Turner Classic Movies on all the time, and he's just in all those. Like what?
He was in The Great Escape.
I
see, in The Magnificent Seven.
Good.
So he was like.
He was also in Charade, 1963, with Walter Matthau, George Kennedy. That cast was fucking stacked.
He was a heavy hitter among heavy hitters, back in the 60s, killing the game.
I forgot to mention Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn, no slouches, as the leads in Charade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that movie is incredible. If you haven't watched that one in a while, and James Coburn's like a young man, and his face just like chiseled features. It was like he was like drawn out of a comic book or something. Crazy.
That's awesome. Also featuring Robert Pastorelli.
Yes.
Gotta love him. Rest in peace also.
Yeah, as Johnny C. Yeah, he was Timmons in Dances with Wolves. Don't hurt my mules. Don't hurt my mules.
You gotta remember him. Yeah, the sort of drunken chuck wagon driver.
I think was recognized for his recurring role as Murphy Brown's handyman.
Was he always in there painting her place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eldon Bernecki on Murphy Brown. Yeah, he died in 2004, aged 49 from a morphine overdose.
Fuck.
Right?
That sucks, man. I had forgotten that he had passed away.
Yeah.
That bummed me out a little bit.
And just super talented, super easy on screen, lots of charisma. Anyway, he was fun in this one.
And then speaking of people who are like still fucking kicking it, James Cromwell, one of your personal favorites, I think.
Love him.
What a fucking legendary dude.
What
himself.
In the blue fuck?
Yes. He can do so much with so little. Like, he does one scene in this movie, and he's incredible. And it's a flimsy-ass scene.
Yeah.
But he can be so menacing. I mean, he can be funny, charming. Wasn't he, like, Babe's...
Yeah, he was the farmer in Babe.
That'll do, pig.
That'll do. That'll do, pig. That'll do.
Yeah, he's a fucking great dude. And kind of a fucking... Like, I didn't realize he was such an animal activist, you know? Like, he glued himself to the counter in a Starbucks or something because he didn't like the way that they have, like, unethical milk. Or something like that. That was recent.
Unethical Milk sounds like a band name.
Yes, dude.
We're Unethical
Milk.
We'll get
on that one after. But yeah, so you said this is a blind taste test for you, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I have no recollection of this. If I saw it, then I was blacked out on Mountain Dew at the time.
Okay, so I love that. Oh, I want to say, yeah, welcome to all of our listeners, new listeners, old listeners. Welcome to our listeners on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network.
All over the world. They're in Australia. They're in Saudi Arabia. They're in
Great
Israel.
Britain. Shout out to my friend Jacqueline, who's in London, promising that she's listening right now. So
she lies.
If not, yeah, true lies.
You better be, or else. I'm just kidding.
If you're listening to us on our own OG feed, check out the podcast network.
Yeah.
Here's some of the other content that's over there. And if you're listening on the podcast network, do yourself a favor and subscribe to our own 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger feed. We got some back catalog stuff there. We release like in a higher audio quality on that feed because
nice.
we're not fighting over every megabyte
right.
with all of our other shows. So if you don't like the way we sound on the podcast network,
how dare you?
We probably sound a little bit better on our own feed.
How could you say such a thing?
So with all that, the paperwork, the formalities out
That's
of the
right.
way,
all we'll that get housekeeping,
down, we'll
let's
get
talk about
to
this fucking movie.
Opens with the fucking Warner Brothers logo,
yes.
Always a mark of quality.
Uh-huh.
I feel like we got a montage of like extreme close-ups of a man getting geared up for combat.
And again, this is something we've seen in Long Kiss Goodnight. We've seen it in other things that we've watched recently too, but yeah, like it's the dress your G.I. Joe part.
Of course. It's like in half of Arnold's movies, I feel
yeah.
like. Commando.
But then also like interspersed with the pictures of like
you're saying
of stuff.
The montage that sort of clues you in on the plot.
Yeah, fills you in on the plot.
Yeah, so that stuff of this dude getting geared up, it's being intercut with like flashes of passports and birth certificates and stuff like that being destroyed. I felt like practically the entire cast of the movie had their names in the opening credits. They were fucking 22 different actors like had their credits.
It was a long sequence.
It was.
Because they were on there like two at a time for the most part,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was nuts. We got these latex gloves being pulled on, a watch being set.
That is a Panerai Luminor Marina. That's a $4,500 watch retail today.
Yeah, they must have paid some money for that placement because it was like a conspicuous close-up.
Yeah, I'm
of
surprised
the watch.
It wasn't like a Rolex or something. But yeah, there's also
but
like...
that's kind of a pricey watch for like a civil servant.
Yeah, well...
As well.
Yeah. So also a shuriken hidden in a belt buckle. Some piano wire, some piano wire getting rolled up, and just like a handful of bullets. Like it's some weird stuff.
It would have been funny. I thought if it was like the glove being pulled on and then fingers dipping into petroleum jelly. What the fuck's going on around here?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And then, yeah, roadside flares being taken out of a box and some red liquid being poured
into
a bottle.
Yeah, what the fuck is that? That's wild.
It's like
it looks like blood, but what is it?
They're showing us everything.
Yeah,
it's corn syrup.
We also see a flash of words, witness protection program.
You know. And we see a picture of Vanessa Williams being burned.
Yeah.
Which, she doesn't enter the plot until later in the movie, so I don't know if... I don't know what we're supposed to make of this.
Yeah.
If we're supposed to just think, this is just a montage, or is this supposed to be happening?
Who knows?
And we see a U.S. Marshal badge.
Right.
And a ski mask being pulled on over the vaguely recognizable head of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Did you recognize that as Arnold? His silhouette?
Tall, angular forehead.
I'm like, I feel like that's a recognizably Arnold, which speaks to his fame.
Yeah.
You can totally see him in a ski mask and be like, yeah, that's Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, I got mugged by Schwarzenegger. Again, Jesus.
So, cut to a quiet suburban neighborhood. Inside a home, a couple of goons are roughing up Johnny, that's Pastorelli, while a woman is bound and gagged on the floor. One of the goons is pouring gasoline all over everything, and the other guy is telling Johnny that no one hides from us. So the gasoline goon, he douses the woman in what else but gasoline.
Right.
The lead goon punches Johnny, tells gasoline dude, go get me some ice because I think I broke my hand. The dudes are like putting off mafia vibes, right?
Yeah, everyone's very Italianate. Like, there's a very like New Jersey, Long Island thing happening.
There was a third goon who seemed like very content to just be looking on and watching it all happen as the door sort of swings open behind him.
Yeah, we hear it like creak behind him. He's like, what is that? Yeah, exactly. Telltale sign. Some shit's about to go down.
The dude was like just nodding like and stoked to be watching.
It's like, though, yeah, this is fun.
So yeah, he goes to check out the door, has some sort of like a noose drop down over his head, and he's hoisted up out of sight like lickety split.
Like Batman.
Did Arnold just do that with brute strength?
Yes.
Okay.
Totally.
Dude got like hauled up like he was weightless.
Yeah.
So the lead goon rips the tape off Johnny's mouth, tells him that the boss wants a souvenir.
Yeah, Mr. Cannellini, or Cannelli, not Cannellini. That's a delicious pasta.
Yeah.
Mr. Cannelli. Mr. Pastrami wants a souvenir.
So he whips out a knife as a fourth goon.
How many guys are in
appears
the
with a pair of pliers and a baggie.
I like that dude just sort of materialized and he's like, hello, yes,
with the sole job of holding the baggie
and pulling the tongue out, one would assume, yes, with those pliers.
Yeah, it appears that the plan is that we're going to cut Johnny's tongue off. The guy says Mr. Cannelli wants a souvenir, so through dialogue we get the impression that Johnny was going to be testifying against the mob,
right?
The lead goon says, we're going to forward the tongue
to your witness protection friends. Yeah.
Well, come on now. Is the tongue going to Mr. Cannelli?
Yeah.
Or is it
who's
going
getting
to
it?
The, who's getting
who
this
gets
tongue?
The tongue? Are you going to split it? You go halvesies on the tongue.
So gasoline goon is like pounding a fried chicken drumstick.
He is distracted. He's supposed to be getting ice, for fuck's sake. You had one job.
All that gasoline pouring is hungry work.
Yeah, it is.
Apparently. But how hungry would you have to be to eat a loose drumstick out of a stranger's refrigerator?
I don't know. Not very.
Yeah, you'd do it.
I've
you don't know how long it's been in there.
Doesn't matter.
If it's, give it a sniff.
Yeah, totally. The sniff test is a for real thing.
So a masked U.S. Marshal John Krueger, a.k.a. Eraser, materializes, hits the dude with like a roundhouse kick before breaking his neck in the freezer door.
Yeah,
I thought it was a pretty sweet kill.
It's a neat kill. Yeah, he clamps his head in the door and then wrenches his body around.
I was wondering if it was Arnold that did that kick, because it was like a pretty decent little roundhouse.
Well, he does this like weird pirouette, slaps the gun, then roundhouse. It's like a neat sequence of moves there.
Yeah. So the goons that are in the other room with Johnny, they hear the commotion, but it's already too late because Eraser comes running into the room, shooting pliers goon. He hits a rolling somersault before sweeping the leg on the lead goon. The guy goes through like a coffee table or some shit. Eraser pounces on top of him, and the goon asks, who the hell are you? And then Eraser responds by killing him in like an unclear manner.
I think he just crushed his windpipe with his forearm. Man. I think he just like bore down on him and cracked
strength.
Just crushed his wind hole.
So Eraser removes his mask, and Johnny demands to know who he is. Who are you? Shut up. I love that response.
Yeah.
Vintage
Fine.
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
There's no need to be rude here. But Eraser tells Eraser tells him and the woman to shut up and close their eyes. He pours that red syrupy liquid all over Johnny's shirt and on the woman's throat. Tells him to keep still and snaps a couple of pictures of them appearing to be dead.
Johnny is immediately down. He's just like, the woman's whimpering.
Does,
and he's like, just do whatever he says to do.
He then tells them to take off the clothes they're wearing along with any jewelry and ID they have. Now, Johnny and Eraser go to retrieve a couple of bodies from his trunk.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, I love that he's just enlisting his witness to help move some corpses around.
Yeah, but like, Johnny must be a hoss because he slung that body over his shoulder, like picked it up and slung it over his shoulder like it was not a big deal.
No, I think he is a pretty thick dude, but yeah, these bodies are getting slung around as if they're mannequins.
Very, very light.
So yeah, he unzips the body bags. They're labeled Wayne County Morgue. He tells Johnny to dress the dead bodies up in his clothes and the women's clothes. Now, Racer drags a couple of the goons out into the front yard.
Right.
He plants the Polaroids of the dead Johnny and his girlfriend on one of the guys.
Right.
Then he stages the scene to look like the one goon shot the other goon in the back. Like he puts bullets in him.
Yeah, he like takes the, and he's wearing the latex glove. Yeah.
The forensics on this would be all wrong, though.
Probably.
Like, it'd be like, well, this person was shot after they were dead. We can tell they were shot like lying down already. You know what I mean? So yeah, he put like the gun in one guy's hand.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, that guy is either the dude who's got a broken neck from the refrigerator or the windpipe.
It's the windpipe
dude.
Guy.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. But I'm just thinking, like, so he shot him in the back, but also he's got his windpipe crushed? Or how did this play out? It's just a long shot that this is going to fool anybody.
They should have done like in the TV show Barry, where he just like sort of crushed his windpipe so that he was still alive and then took him outside and
killed
shot him
there.
So that he was going to be dead.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. Or maybe it's the dude who's already been shot in the chest in the other room or whatever.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I don't know what the theory is that there's like that there's crooked cops and the word will get back to Mr. Canelli that.
Yeah.
That the job was done, but there's also going to be like missing guys, right? Like he'll recognize I'm missing a few other goons. I don't know. Maybe the idea is, in
mob world, that sends a signal that's like, this has gone about as far as it needs to go. And you just leave this one alone, Mr. Cannellini.
It could just be Mr. Cannoli. It could be the only idea is just to create a little initial confusion.
Yeah.
But so then Eraser calls 911, says there's been a murder at that location, asks for the police. I love the moment where Johnny asked Eraser, like, what are you doing? And he tells him, they killed you, and then they turned on each other. And Johnny's like, you sons of bitches. That was a memorable line
to me, really good, from watching
it as a youngster. So they finish staging the scene as the sound of sirens can be heard approaching. Johnny's super nervous, but Eraser tells him,
yeah, keep cool.
Yeah, we need an audience for what's about to happen. So Eraser slings another goon corpse up on his shoulder and tosses the flare into the room. There's like, he slung that dude like he was weightless, but I think...
Yeah.
Eraser's got superhuman strength.
Yeah, I can't remember. That was either the windpipe guy or the fridge guy. I can't remember. I can't keep track of all the bodies, but I think that was
windpipe guy, because I think the guy who he put the gun on had a leather jacket on, and the other dudes didn't have leather. Whatever.
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
And not to mention the fourth goon who's presumably on the roof.
Right. He's in the gutter.
Or he's
and
been
people
dumped
don't
in the
clean
hedges
their gutters.
Or something like that. Yeah. The house goes up in flames as they run to his car. They haul ass out of there just as the police are rolling up. I love the way you fucking fishtailed that station wagon.
Yeah. I love a station wagon. Love this era. Yeah.
So Johnny thanks Eraser enthusiastically, is telling him, if there's anything you ever need, just ask. Foreshadowing. Eraser says that you endangered your life and the marshals assigned to protect you by going back to your old neighborhood for a meal.
I love his girl like scold him. Johnny's like, I couldn't resist the oso buco.
It was like, I felt like it was like Henry Hill at the end of Goodfellas, where he's like saying, out here, you know, all you can get is egg noodles and ketchup or whatever. But rest in peace, Ray Liotta.
Shit, man. The rough week for mob movie actors.
So then
a couple of weeks rather.
Eraser says next time, you know, you won't get rescued. This is a one-shot deal. So they pulled up now next to a body of water, unload from the station wagon. Eraser ditches the car in the water, much to Johnny's dismay.
Johnny doesn't understand what's happening. Thinks they're stranded now or something.
Eraser had that perfectly linked piece of wood ready to go to wedge in.
Dude, he's a professional. He brought that shit from home. Like, he cut that himself. He measured it. He measured it twice before he cut.
Also, though, right, there's a mob guy in a body bag in the back of that car.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just thinking, like, at some point, I feel like that gets discovered, and then I don't know what Mr. Canelli thinks at that point, right?
I think he's just like, We let that one go. We let that one go, obviously.
Honestly, I feel like if and when he's ever found, they feel like another mob family, like,
probably
did
yeah.
it, and then there's like an all-out mob war.
But even if they thought it was like, if it's the feds, what, they're not going to do anything. They'll just be like, all right, we'll let them have this one. Like, we're not, we can't do anything.
Yeah,
about it.
Sure. Now, another van turns on its headlights, and a racer leads them over to it. He tells them, you'll never see me again, but I'll know every move you make. And he says, if Johnny's tries to skip out on testifying, that he will deliver Johnny to the mob himself. As a racer walks away, Johnny's yelling at him again. You know that he's a stand-up dude. Yeah,
he's pleading his case. He's like, I'm the best. I owe you.
Then he's like, what's your name? Which is a fucking weird thing to ask. But the girlfriend and Johnny are shoved into the van by some other U.S. Marshals. And the one dude says, smile, you've just been erased.
End of movie.
That's fucking woof. That is bad.
That's how the movie ends.
Yeah, Academy Award nominee for short film. Is that close enough to naming the movie that we can walk out?
No, I don't think so.
Not okay,
unless someone says Eraser. Okay. But it is like it's, and even the delivery of it is like, that sucked.
That was bad.
It was terrible. Anyway.
So cut to Eraser is walking down the street in Washington, D.C. Everyone was carrying umbrellas, but it wasn't raining.
It was very wet, like it had been just a moment ago.
But like
though.
People had their umbrellas open. Maybe it
literally was like
just
sprinkling,
stopped.
And you couldn't tell like that it had
Or stopped. Maybe the rain just forms a pocket around a racer. Like it never rains where he is.
Yeah, because of physics or whatever.
He repels the rain.
Yeah, he's waterproof.
He walks into the U.S. Marshals Witness Security Protection Program headquarters.
Uh-huh.
Some coworkers ask him if he can pick out the fake driver's license from a set of three that they have, which Eraser runs his fingers over them and then is just instantly like, yep, that's the fake, and walks on. That serves no purpose, that scene. I mean, other than,
supposed
I guess,
to be like, oh, it's so impressive.
He's how good he is at this.
He used to be a bartender. Yeah, so the fuck what?
How does that not pay off later, though? That seems like something that's set up for later on. He's able to tell someone's ID is fake or something.
Maybe,
you know what I mean?
Or it's just supposed to be, it's a dumb plot device, but it's like.
So another guy asks him, you know,
who was that?
I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Boo.
Which is strange because this movie is full of like it being unclear whether his identity is a secret
right.
or they're just telling random people that's John Krueger,
right. John Krueger Mellencamp.
But yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to who's allowed to know who he is or not.
No.
So Eraser is working at a computer, putting the finishing touches on killing off Johnny and his girlfriend.
He's like swapping dental records between whatever corpse was going to be found. And
I am very skeptical that this is how any of this works.
Oh, no. It is definitely, it's not drag and drop technology.
He was just dragging and dropping. And then he printed out a fresh X-ray off of a desktop printer. Like, I don't understand any of it. Is there like a universal dental record database?
And I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that WITSEC is not up there with like CIA as far as their technology.
No, they don't have it like that,
no.
Man.
They are utilitarian. It's like, we're going to put you over here and be quiet. And
yes.
Bye. And that's it.
Now, DeGaren, that's James Caan. DeGaren enters the room. He's admiring Eraser's handiwork. Rest in peace again to the legend.
Yeah.
They engage in a little right-wing banter about how the U.S. legal system is too lenient.
Mm.
And then DeGaren cautions Eraser about such brazen tactics as stealing bodies out of the morgue. Then he starts lamenting the fact that they can't just act with godlike authority anymore. He's like, now the Congress is always looking over our shoulders
right.
and shit like that. Eraser wonders aloud if his actions from the night before are the reason why the big boss, Beller, has called him into his office. DeGaren tells him that the old man doesn't know anything about last night. Then he says Shadow Ops still has some privileges. No fucking clue what that means.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering is Eraser.
Like is he a special wing of Witness Protection?
I think he is supposed to be their like Green Berets or whatever.
He's Jason Bourne or he's like.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
He's the hand of God for WITSEC.
So Eraser gets up to walk out.
But he apparently has his own his own witnesses, too. So he's
I feel like, and I was, so Pastorelli wasn't one of his. That was the first time they ever saw each other.
Yeah,
I think.
It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. So DeGaren says, John, it's good work. Eraser says, I had a good teacher. And DeGaren says, bullshit. You had the best.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that at that moment, having never seen this movie, I guessed right quick that James Caan was the bad guy.
But I will say, it's nice to see. I love watching these elder statesmen like do their thing so they can still act, because he is a fucking killer actor, man. His scenes are all great.
Yeah, well, the line that clued me is like, Eraser says that someone once taught him that improvisation is the heart of field work, and that someone was Daguerrean.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, then he's the bad guy.
He had like he's his mentor.
Yeah, so because it's going to be like a pissing match between these two guys.
It's always the mentor or the apprentice has to, like, one has to turn on the other one always, right? Now, speaking of older legendary actors doing the damn thing.
Woo.
In a wood paneled office, Beller, that's James Coburn, is telling Eraser that we have over 14,000 people in WITSEC protection, but none of them with a profile like the person in the file that I'm holding.
What a voice on James Coburn.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, amazing speaking voice.
According to Wikipedia, in 2020, there were about 19,000 witnesses in witness protection.
Okay.
So I think that number, 14,000 and some odd, is like pretty fucking, that was probably like pretty accurate.
Right.
Back
holds
then.
Up.
Beller says that this person is Lee Cullen. She's a real live, bona fide, honest person.
Uh huh. Yeah, because Eraser immediately assumes that with a file like that they must be scum. But Beller's like, no, this person's actually pretty good.
So Beller says, you know, she works for a defense contractor, CSIRES, specializes in top secret weapons research, and it appears that she had uncovered that someone at CSIRES was like selling secrets. Beller says that Lee is the Fed's star witness, and the case was going to cause a big scandal. He says that she's smuggling some files out of CSIRES the next day, and as soon as that's done, that Eraser is supposed to hide her with the utmost secrecy. Only Eraser and Beller are going to know where she's hidden. Beller warns that this case could affect like some heavy hitters in Washington, so to be careful.
Yeah.
The Eraser seems very concerned for Lee's safety.
Well, she is, via that photo, she's very attractive, so he's like immediately concerned.
But that's our setup of the premise of the film. I dig it. It's like an intriguing premise.
Absolutely.
I can't think of another movie where there was like a witness being protected.
Except for Witness.
Yeah. what was the plot of that shit? She was an Amish woman?
Like the child, I think, had seen some sort of killing.
Okay.
And, yeah, and he was there
Harrison
to, like,
Ford
extract
a witness? Was he a witness protection guy?
I think he was just a Fed, if I recall. But he had to, like, go and join the community. So
yeah, he was living amongst them with Carl from Die Hard. Who looks very fetching in Amish wear.
Yeah, totally.
That dude. But so, fade to Lee Cullen, that's Vanessa Williams, nervously walking up to the CSIRES building, strikingly beautiful woman.
Yeah, definitely.
The building was super fucking futuristic. Wasn't it?
Yeah, very.
There was one of the Cobra helicopters from Con Air was like setting down on the roof or something up there. Lee goes to her office and prepares for her mission. We see that the FBI guys are watching her from an office across the street through telescope and the world's largest pair of binoculars.
Those are fucking huge.
But that was John Slattery.
It was John Slattery, Roger Sterling from Mad Men.
With the beginning of his graying hair. Handsome dude, though.
Always.
So where are these guys supposed to be that they're watching her through binoculars, though? Because I feel like they show the compound later, and it's like,
it's on its own huge
piece of property. Like,
well, that's why the binoculars are so big. Like, but they make it seem like it's right across the fucking street.
Yeah.
Because the way that they can see her, it's like, where
like
are they?
They were seeing a close-up through a window of her, basically.
Exactly.
Lee pops an earpiece in her ear. She turns on a small camera that's hidden in her brooch. Lee makes contact with the FBI guys who were fucking flirting with her off the bat.
I love that she asks if she looks okay, to which John Slattery's like, tell her she looks great. And the guy talking with her says, not bad, Miss Cullen.
Yeah.
Which she seems to appreciate the levity.
I can't blame him, but it's like, I feel like it's probably unprofessional to be like trying to mack on your...
But again, and I'm not saying it's okay, but I mean, it's like, she seems to appreciate the fact that like they were trying to like make the mood lighter, maybe.
Sure.
Yes.
So Lee proceeds to the top secret area where there's heavy security and scientists working away on various projects. They went full on like walleye lens, like it was a fucking Beastie Boys video or something. She sneaks into the secure vault where the company's servers are. These FBI guys are just casually remarking that they bribed somebody to get the code.
Yeah.
It's like, where the fuck is that guy? Why is he not the one who's going in here to do this thing?
That's, there's another movie that's like, it's in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, man, I hope this, is worth the price we paid.
Right.
But anyway, the FBI guys, they lose their audio and video feed when she goes inside.
Yeah, but they're always like, we knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
We knew that she was going to be out of communication for a few minutes.
She better hurry because there's going to be a shift change in 5 minutes. What?
What?
Why are you doing it now?
Yeah, why didn't you do it 15 minutes ago?
Why are you putting yourself in a race against time?
That
is unnecessary. Unless it's somehow important that maybe there's confusion during shift change and it'll help her get out of there.
Also, how long is the hallway that it took her 5 minutes to walk down? Jesus.
I don't know.
She told the security guy she's going to be 10 minutes. She's going to spend 5 minutes of it walking down the hall just like and looking weird. Anyway.
Looking suspicious.
Yeah.
Looking over her shoulder. Who's there? Who's looking? Does anyone see? So Leah, she removes a disc from her purse, pops it in the computer. She begins copying files onto the disc.
With a few deft keystrokes. Just like, what the fuck is that arm that's whipping around in there? Like, what is that?
I feel like in 96, I feel like that was like the height of futuristic, like, tech. I feel like nowadays everything in that room probably fits on a fucking thumb drive or something like that.
But like that arm whirring around, was this supposed to be like moving discs?
I think it's pulling discs or plugging into drives.
I thought that's what it meant, was that it was like moving to a different drive and plugging in.
There's some other movie, and I can't remember what it is now, where there's like a huge version of this and like a person is on the arm as it's swinging around. Like it was some futuristic sci-fi movie. But I think this was like a technology at that time, like if you had a massive server, it would have something like this going on in there. But we see these like schematics of what looks like some type of a gun on the monitor.
Yeah, it's labeled hypervelocity mag pulse proto.
Oh, I didn't even read the text.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we see she finishes up with a few minutes to spare, decides to make another copy.
The fuck? We are low on time. We know that you've got no time, and it's already taken a minute and a half, 2 minutes to copy one disc.
Well, she grabs this disc off like just a stack of discs that's on the desk. That makes me think that it's like a spur of the moment decision that she made, right? Like she didn't come prepared to do this.
It seems from her acting that it was a spur of the moment decision.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like she had planned for it. She was just like, well, as long as I'm here
and I see a disc sitting here, right, I guess I'll make me another copy.
And that makes sense for the time too. Cause I remember being in like labs and stuff and just like stacks of like loose CDs.
Yeah.
CD-ROM.
Now the FBI dudes though, they're freaking out. They're like, we never should have used her, like as if they had other options.
Yeah. Slattery's like, she is out of time.
So she hides that copy of the disc in her little compact and walks out. FBI dudes are celebrating. Security guard at the exit tells her that Mr. Donahue wants to see her.
Yeah.
She says, okay, I'll be up in a minute. And the security guard says, Mr. Donahue said right now.
Rather darkly insistent.
That was a really good reading from the guard. I feel like, because he like had one line and he fucking sold it.
Yeah.
Mr. Like, Donahue said right now.
Yeah.
It was like menacing, you know, the way he said it.
Yeah.
So FBI guys start to panic as the security guard escorts her to the elevator. They're scrambling, trying to figure out what floor of the building Donahue's office is on. Lee says 25th floor, sort of under her breath.
Yeah. Like out loud for their benefit.
The security guard is like, I know where it is. Got real defensive about it. I like that. The FBI guys say, get back up ready and roll in there if things go south. Lee asks Mr. Donahue, that's James Cromwell.
Yes.
What do you want? What do you want? What a fucking talented actor, man.
From the moment you see him, it's like, God, why are you so good?
So he cues up the surveillance video of her sneaking into the server vault. Lee fumbles for an explanation.
What the fuck is this plan then? Like, what the hell?
She's like fumbling for an explanation.
He's like, that's someone I trusted for 5 years and someone that I told others could be trusted.
Mm-hmm. She tries to like come up with some sort of an excuse. He cuts her off. We're way beyond bullshit here.
Amazing.
Which was one of the few lines that I really remembered well, rewatching it even 20 years later. He demands to know who she's working for. She says she should be asking him the same question because she thought they worked for the U.S. government. He says, not to be so naive, we're a weapons manufacturer, not the Red Cross.
Yeah.
He says if the U.S. isn't willing to buy their weapons, it's his job to find someone who will. That can't be true.
Those bottom lines, baby.
Yeah.
We'll sell it to the Saudis.
That can't be how it works. We'll sell you don't it to sell the... it to our enemies.
Sure.
I feel like they're getting paid whether the government buys it or not, right?
You can't, like, I think in a lot
they
of instances,
contracts.
You are under legal obligation to not sell it to.
I'm sure it's all strictly classified, like the stuff that works and the stuff that doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's
like Northrop Grumman is not selling stuff to
North
enemy
Korea.
States. Yeah, exactly. Like, or Lockheed. Well, we decided to give it to Iran. Sorry. No.
So Cullen Lee says she didn't realize that treason was part of the business strategy. Donahue comes over and grabs her, and he sees that camera that's hidden in her blazer. She says she's working with the FBI. They've heard everything you just said.
I love this. Slattery like tells the guy that's on the call with her, like, get her out of there. Get her out. How is he going to get her out?
How is that
going to
work? Like, they don't have guys outside the door. Cromwell, another great reading. And you think that makes you safe?
Oh, and he's just like sits down like deflated.
Dude. He pulls a pistol out of his desk. He points it at her. Says, how could you do this to me? I hope you understand, Lee. You leave me no choice. Donahue turns the gun on himself and pulls the trigger. The window behind him shatters. Fucking paper flies everywhere.
He blows his brains out and the window, and the paper just swirls.
Reams of paper.
And then dozens upon dozens of people run in the room.
They
it's
were
like,
all
who
waiting
the fuck, like right outside the door.
In the ante room. They were all waiting. This dude had like manuscripts for his memoirs or something lying around because it was legitimately like
it was stacks
paper
of paper
everywhere. Yeah. But man, a good little day's work from Cromwell. I feel like they probably shot that scene in a day, you know?
It easily one of the best performances in the movie.
No doubt. In a
movie full of people that are great actors.
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
Especially the old guys.
Security, Donahue's receptionist, everyone bursts in. Lee goes running out of there. She's speed walking towards the exit. Very quick cut because getting down from the 25th floor to the lobby wouldn't be quick necessarily. Like
no.
They probably have the building locked down by then. But as she's walking through, the main security desk gets a phone call to try to stop her. Dude, did you think those security guards were dressed like something out of fucking science fiction? Like
it was,
shiny silver uniforms.
It was, yeah, their uniform was a little out there.
It was like Star Trek-ish.
Yeah.
So she gets past that dude, gets outside, where she is whisked away in an FBI van.
Yeah, her buddies came and got her, thank God.
Yes.
How did they get from where they were four miles away with their binoculars?
There's a checkpoint, I'm sure,
yeah.
a security
gate. No, there
gate.
Is. We see it later in the movie.
Yes.
There's definitely a checkpoint that they had to get through.
We're here to deliver a bunch of pizzas.
We do not understand. But that's another good point.
It
like
works.
We'll talk about it later on.
It works.
How the fuck did he get in? They're like, hey, pizza, wave him through.
I feel like everybody working security there is like someone's brother-in-law or something. You know what I mean? Like they all
the
got
Cannellini
the hook
gang.
Up. But yeah, that's our setup. That's our first
shit.
Act.
Yeah, that gets us going.
That's a lot of shit happened.
It is. It's yeah, it was chocked full.
So we will leave it there. We will refill our glasses.
Hell yes, we will.
Layla says hello.
Hello.
And we'll be back.